because a part of what I realize that we go through is that we forget to dream. So when you've experienced something that really knocks you to your core, you don't trust, you feel vulnerable, the uncertainty is next level, it's all of that. So we forget to dream. And Stephen Covey says, we can't begin, his statement is, begin with the end in mind. And so that means we've got to work out our why again, our potential, our entelechy, as the Greek call it. And that's what's going to propel you forward again.
Yes.
We go on this beautiful journey to, in a safe place, to allow yourself to dream again and tap into your beautiful heart space and let the wise woman within you show you what's possible for you.
Ugh. You're speaking my language, Chris.
Right? And because we're fearful to do that, so we don't. So it's a really, I encourage you to trust me on this process while we do this and just open up. Don't judge it. Just open it, write it. It's a beautiful little process. And then the next part is to look at what's stopping you from believing. What are those unconscious beliefs that you've picked up? Maybe from a well-meaning parent or teacher that said, you're too tall, you're too short, you'll never spell, you can't write. We've all got them, right? Like sticky notes all over our back.
I call them too.
Oh, do you? And then you'll catch them in the mirror and you're like,
what? Hang on a minute.
Where did I pick that one up from?
Hang on, people pleaser. That's
right. So it's about stopping and just having a look at them. And because awareness is such a big part of change, if you can just go, oh my God, I was always told I couldn't spell, but in fact I can. My husband always says to me, go on, you spell it. And I'm going, he goes, yes, that's right. I mean, that's a simple explanation of it, but we can have some pretty hectic ones that can hold us back.
Oh, 100%. Hello there and welcome to Wild and Finally Fucking Free, where midlife isn't a time of crisis, but a time of metamorphosis. Just like the journey through puberty and pregnancy to postpartum, our midlife transition is also a powerful portal of rebirth. The wise woman inside of us is calling, inviting us to slow down, to take stock, to speak our truth, to burn away all that no longer serves us, ready to step forward into our next phase of life. I'm your host, Kylie Fatchett, storyteller and midlife self-care coach, and together we'll unearth the real and raw stories of women who are right in the messy, magical middle, or have come out the other side, and the healers who help all of us through these crossroads of change. I hope that as you listen to these tales of breaking the ties that bind, shedding skins, and courageously chasing midlife dreams, that you too will answer the wise woman's invitation and set yourself wild and finally fucking free. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I have the beautiful Chris Ross with me today. Hi, Chris. How are you?
No, I'm great. I'm honored to be here. It's exciting.
I'm so excited. Do you know what? I have absolutely loved this last week because I've been interviewing the mastermind girls that we're in a mastermind with. I've got to get to know them and their businesses so well. So I'm so looking forward to this chat too.
Yes.
For people that don't already know you, how would you like to introduce yourself on this fine summer in Queensland day at the very least?
That always really fascinates me, that how to introduce yourself. Well, I feel we wear so many hats. But I guess for this podcast, I am an emotional well-being coach. I've been an entrepreneur for over 30 years, managed my own businesses, but I'm now the founder of Head to Heart and the beautiful transformational program Becoming You. So yeah, that's a little bit about what I'm doing at the moment. Yes.
Now I want to know how many other different types of entrepreneurial businesses you had, but I'm going to stick to the program. Ask that. How did you start entrepreneurship? What drove you towards the independence, freedom, loving lifestyle? Because we use our laptops on the beach, work, right?
What was wrong with me? Why didn't I go and get a job and do normal things? Oh, God. My first business was a little childcare center in our area. Our son was attending the center. We loved it. It was just small and gorgeous, tree lined, and then it got sold to an older gentleman who I think was told as a ex-bank Johnny that he should invest his money in childcare. And anyway, he didn't buy it because he wanted to support families. And so he ran it into the ground, and eventually everybody left, and there was only about 8 families left when we finally shared at a ridiculous price. And the next thing you know, here I am sitting in an office going, oh my God.
My God, what have I done?
I know nothing.
Wow. Talk about so, jumps in, boots and all.
That was my first business. And from there, I learned pretty quickly. I had to get rid of a couple of staff that weren't pulling their weight either. And as a parent, I went in it from the point of view was, what did I want as a parent? How did I want my children to be brought up? What was really important to me? What was my values? And I wanted the business to be run that way. And 3 years later, we were multi-award winning. I had finished a degree in business, and it was, we should have stopped there, really.
In hindsight.
I should have stopped there. Oh dear. But yeah, so that was really lovely. That was huge growth, but impactful, so impactful on the community. It was really very rewarding.
That just makes so much sense to me, because what I know of you is that you are so aligned to helping people develop and to feel nurtured and experience this feeling of resilience. And so, of course, you're going to go into business and have the framework of, what would I want as the end consumer? I imagine sometimes that's going to be competing with what you need as the owner of the business, though. Was that the case or not?
Sometimes we had to follow rules and regulations. I had to learn how to write policy and procedure and
I'm sorry.
All of those terrible things. So there was that there's always that side of it, the masculine and the feminine. We needed the strategy. But also we needed the heart. But if we didn't have, because I started with heart and coming from that space, but was going to quickly fall apart if I didn't have the right strategies in place to support. That's right.
Edges to flow inside of.
That's it. So I had to learn very quickly how to put all of that together.
Holy moly. Think on your feet territory. So did you stay in that type of, or did you change in businesses?
Yeah, no, the next business was also a childcare center. And yes, it was interesting. That was a tough one, that one. A different demographic and a lot of different issues. And also childcare was changing. Childcare was moving very much into a lot more rules and regulation. It was getting to a stage where the small operator couldn't really stay in business by themselves because there was so much information that government wanted. And to keep up with all of that, you really needed somebody who was going to focus just on policy, somebody else who was just going to focus on staff training, somebody else to focus on parenting. And that's why economies of scale where people have 3, 4, 5 childcare centers, because there's a lot of work and there's not a lot of financial flow with just one childcare center, because and as it should be, the ratios are so high of needing, and also staff need to be paid exactly what they're worth now too. They're qualified, they're trained. You have early childhood trained teachers. These people need to be recognized for what they do, and we totally supported all of that. However, the profit margins were getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, a lot of work.
I have 2 daughters, and my younger daughter has always been like my husband, this baby and kid magnet. Like, all babies and kids love both of them. They sit down at a party, and if there's a kid there, the kid is on top of them, like 100% of the time. My older daughter and I are like, not really into the little tiny babies. Anyway, and so she went through a stage where she'd done a carpentry apprenticeship and that hadn't felt right. And then she's, I'm going to go and work in a childcare. she very quickly tired of that idea, because some of the things that she saw happening in places where it's this formative, should be warm and welcoming and loving, yeah, and all of those things. But as you say, when the regulations come and there's financial pressures and government pressures, et cetera, it's like aged care where I found myself working. Highly regulated. You can't care the way that you want to, yep, because you don't have the staff and you don't have the resources, and there's not enough cash in it for the people that, yep, own the places, which often, like you said, yep, like the older gentleman, like I found myself working in a brand new state-of-the-art, amazing aged care facility, but it had been bought as a cash cow by a group of young financial entrepreneurial type of people, and there just was no love. Anyway.
We digress.
I know, it's absolutely true. And it was one of the reasons that I knew we had to get out of it, because my heart just couldn't be in it at that level anymore. And we didn't have much of a profit margin because we cared so much and everything was top notch and extra care for the staff and the people who bought it. They immediately cut down on so much stuff.
Yeah.
So sad. It is sad. It was really hard. But saying that, I got to work with some incredible women. I got to help a lot of those women really discover about themselves and what really mattered. We did a lot of team training, team building,
yeah,
really helping them to discover who they really were along this line. That if we weren't just child carers, we were educators, we were supporters, we were stepping in as a part of the family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
people were literally with us all week.
Mm-hmm.
So those children became their family, and I felt as a big responsibility that comes with that to help nurture and grow those children and the people who are caring for them.
Mm.
So it was a lot of love and passion, and that it was getting the government regulations really.
Yeah, I totally understand.
Yeah.
I had this theory that when I went into, I was hired by this aged care facility to run a completely different version of what used to be called a lifestyle program, but they were going to do it in a completely new way, and they wanted someone to run it, and I'd run health and wellbeing programs in mining and disability services. And I was so excited about this job because it sounded so amazing. And unfortunately, very quickly, I worked out that actually it was a good concept, what they wanted to do, but there wasn't spare cash, there wasn't whatever. But it's interesting because as I'm hearing you talk, like we were talking about an event that you spoke at the weekend, and you were saying how it was so beautiful to hear other people's stories and how midlife can be this time when we really understand, or maybe not understand, but we get invited to dive into what's important to us. Who do we want to be? What do we want to develop? And it sounds like you've been doing that for a long, long time before you were in your business now. So it's very cool. I love the story I always say the golden thread that runs through people's lives that leads them to do the work that they do in the world. It sounds like it was like that for you too.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it was when we finished up with the last business, I was like, well, what am I going to do now? What do I want to do now? And so I thought, I've always been coaching people or encouraging people to be their best selves. And I think that kind of led from one thing to another. And then I got some coaching for myself, and we worked through this. Perhaps you'd be really good in the coaching world and putting yourself out there. And then I realized that I'd already had a 6-step program in place, but I'd never seen it as that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I know. Until exactly we started workshopping it and then going, this could be it.
This is a framework. This is actually what I've been approaching development of myself and others for a long time. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. And so that is where Becoming You, which is your signature program, came from, which we weren't even going to talk about yet, but I think this is the... So tell us a little bit about it. So you fast forward out of childcare, you've obviously trained as a coach, and now you have this amazing business. And I know that there's some personal turning points as well that invited this big change for you.
And there often is, and what I'm realizing too is that everybody will go through will come to some kind of crossroad in their lives that really challenges them or shakes them off their tracks, and you're just not sure how to get back on. And we all go into autopilot, right? We just looking good on the outside, but we just go through the motions and nothing seems to really tick your boat and tick your, what is that saying?
Yeah. I don't know now.
Float your boat.
Your boxes, float your boat.
And that was where I got to. After our son had a serious accident overseas and fell from a cliff and broke his back and had to be airlifted back to Australia. And after that stage, when you experience something that really shakes you, you just feel so frightened of the uncertainty of life, vulnerable, right? And it could be anything. It could be a marriage breakdown or a change of jobs after a very long time, or you've been in a career for so long that you just don't know. You've just gone through the motions, or you've retired and you're wondering, what do I do now? What is important to me again? And it was on my own healing journey from there, because I went into a very dark place for a long time. Like I just slipped into autopilot, figured that's how I was going to cope.
Do you look back now and when you say autopilot, would we now these days call that like a freeze or a dissociation response? Is that how you see it, or it was the only way that you knew how to just get through the day? So you just put one foot in front of the other and put blinkers on? How would you describe?
People would say, how are you going? And I realized that a lot of them didn't really want to know how I was going. So you got into this place where that mustn't be good then to share how I'm feeling. So you just learnt to shut down and
that mask on.
And just say, we're getting along with our new normal and moving through life. But that wasn't the truth. And I didn't know how to share that with anybody. And I didn't know how to allow myself to feel safe again until I met a beautiful coach who helped me work through that, move through it. And I'm not saying it's great every day and it's all rainbows and unicorns, but it's definitely, I feel a lot clearer. And that was when I thought, I know that there's a lot of people out there that go through life-changing events that don't know how to get themselves back on track. And we need to, we really do need to. We really need to reconnect so that we can have that next chapter in our life with more joy and hope.
Yeah, I think when you said feeling vulnerable, because then all of a sudden, because I think all of us go through life assuming big chunks of things are going to be okay until something happens and it's not. And then you get that feeling of, I don't talk about it on this show and I don't intend to, but I've gone through something similar with a very close family member. And I just remember being in a state of constant fear, like constant hyper aware vigilance. And I still find myself in that state often. And I need to just keep using the tools and keep reminding myself that it is safe and that no matter whether something catastrophic happens again, that I actually do have the internal resources and I can trust myself enough to know that I will deal with it, whatever it is, because there is no certainty. And that, I think that's what it teaches you is actually nothing certain. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. And
that's exactly the title of my presentation. And in fact, the book that I'm writing was just called Any Ordinary Day. It was just Any Ordinary Day. I got up in the morning, opened your eyes, jumped out of bed, getting coffee or breakfast and organizing the kids. And you don't feel that tingle that anything is off about that day. And it's often not until retrospect you look back and you go, oh my God, that ordinary day changed my life.
Yeah. Sliding door moment.
Do
you find that the flip side of having that point in time that challenged what you assumed also has an equal and opposite gift of knowing, I'm trying to put it into the words I would use, that anything's possible? Like, does it give you that? And I know that
And not until retrospect, though. We were looking through it and working with the coach, and we were looking back at that time, because that was the thing, was like, who was that woman?
Yes.
I learned that we were encouraged to have the operation by these overseas doctors, and instinct was like, no, you don't touch our son until we figure out what the hell is going on here. And we had to, in 24 hours, we were on a plane across the country to be there to meet him. And it was another 3 months before we were able to come home. That was a complete life's change. So it is that any ordinary day, and it is retrospect though. And I can now see, because I believe that we can't heal ourselves by ourselves, right? We've got, everybody needs nurturing, supportive guidance to get us through our own glass ceiling so that we can look back and go, oh, wow. So that was already within me.
Yeah.
All of those attributes already within me. Mm-hmm. And we just lose it with all the noise and the busyness and the... So, yes.
Through the motions completely.
When you get to a place, yeah, you could look at it and go, that didn't happen to me. What if it happened for me?
Yeah.
What if it happened for us? And a lot of people can be really offended by that, but when you do the work, you think, okay, there's a lot of growth in a big change like that.
Oh, absolutely. It was actually years ago, I found myself working with a friend of mine, more of an acquaintance who became a friend, but she was very deeply trained. I don't know if that's the right way of saying it, but in Demartini. And there's a beautiful Demartini exercise, John Dean. There's a beautiful Demartini exercise where you go through the process of seeing both sides of an event, but it's not just, oh, let's think about the positive of your son having this catastrophic thing happen to him. It's a process where you come at that kind of sideways, and then you have this, like, I call them like a chiropractic adjustment of the soul, where all of a sudden you can see all the different perspectives of it. And yeah, it's, I don't know, I remember doing the process and going, that completely neutralized something that was such a burr in my energy. And
oh my gosh, what you just stress said system. Is incredible. The coach I was speaking to just before, mm-hmm. said exactly the same thing that you just said. That chiropractic alignment of bringing your soul back into your life.
Yeah.
Because it shifts when you experience that, and your adrenals get overworked, and you run down, and because nothing matters anymore. Nothing mm-hmm. matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't, because you don't have the space for it.
You're so bandwidth.
Filled with the shock and the trauma and the exhaustion that comes from it. And that's that running on autopilot, running on empty, just going through the motion. I'm sure there's some really beautiful technical terms for it, but I don't know them.
I like to call it stuck. Frazzled.
Exactly.
Like, I just felt there was literally no joy in my life at all, because I was coping with the stress of what was right in front of me and trying to keep my family together.
Yeah,
that's actually when I walked away from my coaching business, because I was coaching at the same time, and I was just like, I don't have anything left to hold space for anyone else. And I can also look back now and go, thank God, because it's given me so much of a different appreciation for what's important to me. And it certainly cured me of chasing things that were external expectations rather than my internal value system and the purpose that I really felt.
Gosh, so I feel like you're just explaining my 6-part journey.
Oh, cool.
I was like, oh my God, you're going to love what I have to say.
So good.
Because it's so true, right? Let's jump in there then, because a part of what I realize that we go through is that we forget to dream. So when you've experienced something that really knocks you to your core, you don't trust, you feel vulnerable, the uncertainty is next level, it's all of that. So we forget to dream. And Stephen Covey says, we can't begin, his statement is, begin with the end in mind. And so that means we've got to work out our why again, our potential, our entelechy, as the Greek call it. And that's what's going to propel you forward again.
Yes.
It's, we go on this beautiful journey to, in a safe place, to allow yourself to dream again and tap into your beautiful heart space and let the wise woman within you show you what's possible for you.
Oh, you're speaking my language, Chris.
Right? And because we're fearful to do that, so we don't. So it's a really, I encourage you to trust me on this process while we do this and just open up. Don't judge it. Just open it, write it. It's a beautiful little process. And then the next part is to look at what's stopping you from believing. What are those unconscious beliefs that you've picked up? Maybe from a well-meaning parent or teacher that said, you're too tall, you're too short, you'll never spell, you can't write. We've all got them, right? Like sticky notes all over our back.
I call them too.
Oh, do you? And then you'll catch them in the mirror and you're like,
what? Hang on a minute.
Where did I pick that one up from?
Hang on, people pleaser. That's
It's about stopping and just having a look at them. And because awareness is such a big part of change, if you can just go, oh my God, I was always told I couldn't spell, but in fact I can. My husband always says to me, go on, you spell it. And I'm going, he goes, yes, that's right. That's a simple explanation of it, but we can have some pretty hectic ones that can hold us back.
Oh, 100%. And I think too, as you're talking about the event that you went through, my sense of the way that you're talking about it and also the way I experienced, not the same thing, similar, is your field of reference or your environmental bandwidth that you can pay attention to becomes so narrow because you are only dealing with the fallout and the impact of that thing. And it sounds like in your process, by allowing people to dream again, they're actually opening up the aperture again. So it's, hang on a minute. I've been trained by fear and a very normal adaptive protective mechanism that our brain goes through when we go through trauma is pay attention to the threat.
Yep.
Don't pay attention to anything else because it's not important right now. And so it sounds like by your process, you're actually got goosebumps. opening up the aperture and actually helping people to understand there's actually a whole field of possibilities out there.
Absolutely. Exactly what I say is that we need hope isn't a strategy, but hope is a beautiful thing when you've lost it. And to open up when we can shift our energy from this low level fear, worry, survival to going, okay, maybe there's possibility for me again. This is what opens up possibility, opportunities come your way that you didn't see any before because they were always there. It's just that we've just shot ourselves down through that fear.
Because they're looking through.
Yeah, that tiny little aperture and you get a wide angle lens and you go, oh my God.
And I loved my favorite coaching question that I was ever asked and then also learned to put into practice. And I don't coach anymore, not that type of coaching, but is when someone says that's not possible, just replacing it with maybe that is possible. And just that tiny little language is so powerful.
Maybe it is
possible. I wonder how. I wonder if. I wonder. Yeah. Then it's, the field of possibilities gets a little bit wider. And as you say, because we're not then training our brains to only pay attention to the limited, tiny little bit of environment and potential that we can see, we then therefore detect more because that's how our brain works. It's very, very cool.
Absolutely. We even talk about that. I go through the stages, the makeup of the brain so that people can see that it's not always their fault. And it's just, that's how the brain is designed to keep us safe. And a part of the brain shut it down into a degree because it's not getting any messages of joy and happiness.
Yeah.
So it's constantly feeding you what you need to hear because that's what you're seeing. That's the lens, as you say, that we're looking through. And it's so important to see there's signs. And there's also heart.
Oh, right? God, yeah.
Science behind it, but we can begin to make those adjustments by simply changing our language in some ways.
I just want to honor you and every other coach on the planet has ever helped someone to understand that something else is possible. Because to me, that is the incredible power of having a coach in any area, like whether it's same sort of thing as I was actually having this weird reflection, which is now coming back up 10 hours later. I was in a personal training session this morning and I was just like, this is the power of coaching in a physical sense, because I would never attempt any of the things that I do in a personal training session by myself, because A, I don't know they even exist, and B, I would not have any faith in my ability to do them. But because someone outside of me who sees me from an objective perspective with no limits has invited me to do something, and it's the same sort of thing when you're working with a coach, when you're at a stuck point, it's just, let's look at it from a different lens, a different perspective.
Thanks.
And I just think all of you who have chosen that as a vocation are so important for changing the way that we see the same reality, but in a very different way.
It is, because I'm grateful for a coach too. Without my coach way back then, I really don't know that I would. I was in a really dark place.
Yeah.
And the pain was so painful that I really couldn't see what was the point.
What made you seek a coach if you were, like, when you're in that, place where pain feels all-encompassing and overwhelming?
I think it was one of those things. One thing led to another, led to another. It was like, I think my sister started seeing somebody and I thought, oh, that's pretty amazing. And then that led us to find out about the coaching institute, and then that led to something else. And then I feel you can look back and go, oh, look, it wasn't this path. It wasn't this path. It was a bit like this.
Yeah, like it.
Squiggly line all the way down until you get to it. And then deciding that, wow, maybe I could help others with this journey has become a bit of an obsession, passion. So. Yeah, it hasn't been a straight line. It's been a journey of its own. And it's been evolving as well. It's because after the beliefs and we creating new mindset and language, changing our language, becoming aware of what we say to ourselves and to others, and we look at those attributes that rose up within you that was supportive of you. I love that. When I looked at what an attribute is, it actually says it's an inherent quality or character. So that means that it's already within you. You come here with it. And we usually don't tap into the courage, determination, persistence, whatever those moral compasses are, until something shakes you. And then we just slip back into, oh, mediocrity, it's all too hard. When we can name them, what was it that rose up in you, Kylie? What was that rose up in you? Let's look at what that, and for me to have this coach ask me, who was that woman? What rose up in her? I was like, wow, that's always there. It's always there. Maybe I can lean into it more and not survive whatever comes along, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. Will. And that. Recognition of being able to trust yourself no matter what happens.
Yes.
I reckon that's one of the most freeing things to understand. And I feel like also there is a natural part of this midlife transition point that I find myself in, where I've lived long enough and experienced enough things to know no matter what. Like it's funny, I was often told as a kid that I was pig-headed and it was like a negative thing.
Yeah.
And I
strong,
really,
little thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which meant you're difficult to parent, which I totally was. And my youngest daughter is very similar to me and far out, man. Did she give me a workout? But she's a spectacular human as well.
Yeah.
And she's a spectacular human. But now when I think about pig-headedness, when I say that, there's still a little tiny bit of kind of turbulence that happens. But I have learned to value my tenacity and my perseverance as one of my strongest attributes, because when I decide that something is for me, I will, maybe to my detriment sometimes actually as I'm speaking, but I will keep on keeping on. And I just think so many times in my earlier life, I gave up, and maybe part of that was because I felt like I was being pigheaded. Like it didn't feel right to claim something for myself. And now I'm like, not at the expense of other people. I'm not meaning that. But if I decide this is what I want to create, damn straight, that's what's going to happen. It may take me a little bit of time, and I may have to fall down 20 times and get back up 21, but I will get there. And I just think, yeah. And then you birth a death.
And it's not a curse, right?
Yeah, no, it's not a negative thing.
That's right. Yeah. And it's often, as I was saying on the weekend, if you can look back to that characteristic that rose up within you, that's the truth of who you are. That is your strength and character. That's what's always there. That's the truth. And sometimes nature of the universe has a funny way of showing us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's bring that one out to play.
I'll put you in a really challenging situation. I'm going to see what's going to come up for you. But the key then is to learn how to remind ourselves that it is a strength, that it is an attribute, that it is beautiful part of who we are. And then, looking at all of those standards and expectations as well that we probably picked up that aren't ours either. All those expectations that just sap you of your essence, and they're not even yours.
No. Oh, my goodness. And like the people pleaser sticky note that I just removed from my back, I still have that one turning up, and I'm just like, far out, man. How many decades of work is this going to take? But it is so well ingrained in me to make someone else's needs more important than mine. I have to say that perimenopause has been a great teacher of that, because I haven't had anything left in the tank to be able to get all up in everybody else's business and fix things and hero things and whatever.
Yeah.
So it's forced me to change my way of being. Thank goodness, because if not, I probably still would have been people pleasing in my 90s. I'm not in my frame.
No, don't look at me. For you, you can't pick it up.
The motor is strong.
Oh, gorgeous. I love it.
Anyway, tell us about becoming you, because I feel like we've talked about some of the aspects, but it feels like this six-step thing that you were already doing, that was already this framework that now looking back in hindsight, did you see that you actually worked your way through all of the six steps?
Oh, absolutely. And still, just like you said before, right, I'm still working through my own expectations and standards that I had, and those terrible beliefs that somebody else put upon me that I made my own. And then ultimately, it's about what I like to say, unearthing your values. So unearthing what sings to your soul, because that's the truth of you. It's a bit different from a moral compass, where we talk about courage and determination and persistence. They're our moral compass. They're our attributes, our inherent qualities. What I've learned about values is that they're more than that. A value is something that sings to your soul, like a sentence. I love going to the gym because health and vitality is so important to me. Does that make sense?
Yes. I feel, as you're talking, I always think of values as a really easy filter system, in terms of if something comes across your windshield and it's, oh, I'm a bit interested in that. But if I keep on coming back to what I really value and also what I see for myself, so coming back to that potential and that sort of possibility picture, it's easier for me to know whether something is for me or not for me if I filter it through my values. Is that because, to me, values is more of an identity. It's, I am the person who chooses to take care of their physical body so that I feel radiant and resilient and strong. Because that's that feeling, that physical feeling, is so important to me, and has been, again, something that's, it's almost an attribute joined with a value. This is my attribute, and to feed that, I need my value to align to that.
Absolutely. And so that's the whole six steps. So by the end of the steps, you completely unearthed the truth of who you are and what really matters to you, so that you feel aligned again. Like, for example, you might start a job that you feel really aligned with in the beginning, but something changes along the way, like they change or you change or philosophy.
Or you get bored because you've got raging undiagnosed ADHD.
Yes.
And this,
all of these things. And then you're not aligned anymore. And you feel what I feel like you rubbed up. You feel all prickly or sad or autopilot again.
Unmotivated, yeah. And
is when you're not in alignment with what really matters to you. That is where some of us spend the rest of our days without really taking time to have a look at it again. I know I wonder if I would have stayed there. I don't know if I hadn't met my coach, but probably not, because that's not really my personality.
I feel like there would have been some sort
I would have done something
or something
yeah.
that led you to, because you have, when you talked about helping other women develop themselves and come back to what's important to them, it feels like that was already a very strong, like maybe that's one of your attributes, is always being able to go, okay, and now what?
Yeah.
What's not the next level? Because I hate that kind of hustle frame of reference, but.
A greater understanding of yourself and what you're going through, and mm-hmm. that we can set our own little glass ceiling that it's all a part of keeping safe. And yet Rick is unhappy a lot of the time.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh my goodness, yes. Safe is a place I find myself when I don't have trust in myself.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's the exact opposite. And when you're talking about values, like one of my highest value, actually the highest value I have is freedom. And so if I had just done something like becoming you and understood how important freedom was for me, I may have approached my whole employment journey differently, because I was never, ever going to be happy. And I always used to say, I suck at being an employee. I don't actually suck at being an employee. I just like total, absolute freedom. And I'm very independent. And like today, when my trainer has a cancellation and do you want to do a personal training session, I want to be able to say yes if it feels good, rather than no, I have to be at my desk at 8:30. That does not.
Yeah.
So I think I would have had more compassion for myself, because this is what's important to you. It's okay to align your life to that. Right. It's not bad to want what you want.
And I just heard, yes, exactly. And I heard Dr. Claire Zammit, who I follow, she was talking about how we apologize for wanting things in our life. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with wanting. Or I like to say desiring, because I feel like wanting is more of a negative than desiring. So when we're desiring for things into our lives, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as it's coming from here. Yeah. That we deserve to have happy, beautiful things around us, and the joy of our, you know, wealth not just being finite, but good friendships, a wealth of beautiful things in your life, or
connection,
ways to think. Anyway, I'm digressing of that, but I really loved what you were saying about women wanting, or people, I guess we all do it, is apologize for desiring more things in our life. So it's absolutely.
I'm wondering, as you were talking, I feel like there's so many external expectations of how to be, I'm going to air quote, a good mother, a good wife, a good woman, a good whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then there's all those internal expectations that are driven by the conditioning and the beliefs that we're given. And sometimes we add to them or expand on them.
Yeah.
I know I certainly did. And so when people do this work with you, and I love that you keep on saying unearthed, because I have this sense of these precious, precious jewels of ourselves, like laying. I had a podcast guest a long time ago, the beautiful Janet McGeever, who does a lot of work around relationships and intimacy, and particularly through menopause and into postmenopause. And she said that her sense of her wanting, her desiring in perimenopause was to lie on the cool forest floor amongst the leaf litter and just rest. And I'm not saying it as beautifully as what she did, but that was basically. But when you're thinking unearthed, I'm like, he's like jewels that are, hidden under this beautiful earthy, grounded, dark and deeply feminine. That's the other thing, that's the dark and the mystery is very feminine. And then you get to go searching for them and recognize yourself.
Yes, yes, I love that. That's
a cool thing. When you think about that.
Recognize yourself.
Yeah, meet yourself.
Yes, basically. That's why I loved becoming you. It's becoming back to you again. I don't know. There's a lot of different things that I called it to begin with, and I might continue to change it again.
It's
evolving. But the journey itself is the same essence. But yeah, I love that. The lying on the earth.
Yeah, the cool. I will find it for you and I'll send it to you because it's also so graphic. It's lying on the cool forest floor.
Yeah.
And just it was about her desiring of deep rest. And I think that particularly in midlife, when potentially for a lot of us, there's a lot of identity shifting as well that happens. I think it can be really discombobulating for women who have really strongly identified as like the very hands-on mum, for instance.
Yes.
And then your kids are leaving home, or the one who is always the caretaker and then parents pass away or whatever, like whatever the shift is. And I just think,
yes,
there's a natural invitation to, there's a natural question that happens. Who the hell am I now? What does this mean for me? Who can I be with this without the sticky note that this has been on me this entire life? But then there's also an equal and opposite invitation of you could go and meet yourself for maybe the first time. Because yeah. I don't know whether I was saying this before we started recording, but I don't reckon I knew myself in my 20s or 30s. I was just doing the things that I was expected to do, get the job and get the house and get married and have kids and all that stuff, like just ticking the boxes. I don't reckon I stopped to actually check in with what I wanted, who I was, what I valued. Yeah. Like I just didn't have that frame of reference at all until, yeah, the event that I'm talking about, but then also very much so since I've hit the more trying end of the perimenopause transition and just gone, yeah. I do not have enough in the tank to do all of these roles and sticky notes and responsibilities that I've given myself and meeting these ridiculous expectations that no one else cares about except for me, driven by conditioning. And I'm just like, oh, just leave that crap there. when people unearth these jewels, I keep on, that's my picture in my head, these beautiful jewels that are in the soil and yeah, lying dormant. What's possible from that place?
I think, and that's a really gorgeous question. And the even though there's six steps, I like to make it because I learned for that very reason. Like then people go, what do I do with all of this now? And I'm unearthing this. And some of the ladies have, one lady comes to mind straight away. She's gone on a first overseas journey by herself, right? She really embraced that. And somebody else has gone on a dating game again. Somebody else unearthed her creativity that she always was told that, oh, that's a waste of time. So they really started to step into things. However, now I've made the course a little bit longer so that we have 2 to 3 extra weeks to really delve into it and talk about it and encourage each other. Because, see, I love group coaching. I think group coaching with women, it's like they all get to coach each other in a way.
Oh, so good.
And a lot of them have become good friends as well along the way. And you also get to see that alone. Oh, my God, you felt like that too. It's the first time I've said this out loud. Yeah. That type of journey is so powerful. Yeah, but I feel like I'm extending it this year. I'm extending it to be 8 weeks so that we get to really explore that intuitiveness, that grounding that we can start to feel a bit safe. And then ultimately, I guess I'd like to look at another level journey where we take it even deeper and we go on a bigger journey. But you really need to have the basics first before you can get up there. So the whole idea with the course was to become an awake, just to wake up and see that there is possibility, there is potential within you, that it's always been there, that with all the noise and the menopause and the
mess
and the shifts and those beautiful earthy leaves building up, that there is gorgeous. I'm just getting this big picture of soil with worms and that doesn't sound lovely, but it is. It's rich and it's moist, and that's who we are. Yeah, like getting back to us again, that little girl who loved to use her imagination and had big dreams before everything got lost.
Yeah, before we learned how not to dream.
Yeah, exactly. And before life challenges threw us off our path. And,
yeah. And maybe invited us to our actual path, which we can only see in hindsight.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I feel like I can look back at all of the challenge. I used to really, 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 and I know that people that have listened to this show for all of the three seasons will know what I'm talking about. I feel like I carried the identity of being a childhood trauma sufferer or survivor for so long that it was an identity that really limited what I could conceive as possible.
Yeah.
And over this most trying last 12-month period, I feel like I've come out the other side of that identity and can see all the blessings and all of the perspectives of that. Wow. And I don't actually feel like I need to kind of like make up for lost time or something, because I know that I couldn't do. I actually had this incredible moment in, I've got a beautiful friend, Sarah Brooke, who does amazing healing and womb weaving and shaman and animistic work. Just an incredible healer. And I've had a series of sessions with her, and we were talking about how exhausted I'd found myself, and mainly around work stuff. And she said, just tell me a little bit about your process. And I was telling her about when I write copy for other people, or when I write a book, and I call it co-writing. But I really, my sense is that I step into feeling and writing the way that person would, and then I step back out of it when I'm finished writing. And kind of emotional. We had this moment where she's like, okay, so I would invite you to do a couple of things just to be. And she said to me, I know you think that this is something that everybody can do, but actually what you're doing is merging your energy with someone else and being able to tap into what their message is and then remove yourself again. And that's not something that everyone can do. And I was like, oh, okay. That's pretty cool. Didn't realize that. And often what comes naturally to us, we don't value, because it's like, oh, everybody can do that. But what came about in the session was that I just got an email from someone to say, I've never felt so seen, and I've never had someone get me so quickly. This sounds like I'm doing an ad for my copywriting. That's not my point. My point is that I had a final chiropractic adjustment of the soul, where it's like my entire childhood, I just wanted to be seen. And without that experience, I could not do that for other people. And I was like, and now we are done. That is the lesson, the gift, the balancing, the seeing everything from everything perspective. And that entire emotional charge about that whole story just went. I was like, how incredible is that? And again, like honoring the coaches and the healers that can see the patterns in us that we can't see for ourselves because we're too close to them. But how amazing to be able to, that felt to me like recognizing myself in a way I've never been able to. And that is what this program of yours allows. I feel that it's like that, almost like that little, you know, that recognition piece where you're like, oh, hello, there you are.
Yeah.
There you are. There you are. Like, what joy is in that?
Oh. And that people have said to me, oh, my gosh, I always saw, like you said, you know, that pig-headedness as a negative thing. What if we don't call it pig-headedness?
Change the language.
And it's something so beautiful that it is absolutely a character and an inherent quality that is what you're meant to have, right?
Yes.
That's, you've come here with. So
exactly.
Let's step into her and just learn how to lean into those beautiful yeah, qualities and setting your own standards, like realizing that we withhold love. And I love this. I've talked to Sarah about this before and love this saying of withholding love. We withhold love from ourselves in this mistaken belief that we'll be happy when. And so that's supposed to drive you forward.
Yep.
We won't be happy until we get that new house. We won't be happy until I get this job or I make this much money or that we get.
Find Mr. Lose the 20 here. Yeah. Blah, 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 right. Blah, 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 yes. Blah.
And so we withhold love. We withhold love from ourselves. Mm-hmm. We withhold love from others. We can withhold love from others by having expectations of them that set them up to fail as well.
Exactly.
We set them up and then we go, oh, yeah, I knew that would happen. Yeah. I knew you'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go. And you think, holy. That's just far and not there. But it's how we've been conditioned and brought up. And so got to see that that's what we're doing so that we can begin to let go of those and just begin to open our hearts again and feel that flow of love and energy and the truth of who we are.
And believe that it's available now. I'm writing with an EFT coach at the moment, writing a book together, and the way that he phrases what you're talking about is when I, then I. So I can't have, and for him, this book is a lot around business entrepreneurship, and what we were writing about was around earning income and receiving, but it's I can't have the successful business. I can't relax and have better business boundaries. I can't whatever until I reach a certain goal or have the team member or, and it's all the same stuff. It's all withholding love and acceptance and flow and receptivity because we think we have to be different to who we are. And my goodness, the more you clean that crap off the windshield, the more that things become easier and easier.
Yes.
I'm finding myself looking backwards going, how did you know this about 20 years ago? But I think we can always trust the timing. Always happen too.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. So
good. Yes. Very good. Oh, you have been a joy. I knew you'd be a joy, but you've been a joy.
You've been a joy. It's just been lovely to open up and share that and both of us go, yes, I get that. And we're really good. It's been lovely. Really lovely. I just need to get it out there. I just feel like I'm probably withholding love from me in a way too, to go because it's so new. I've only really put together in the last 12 months is to go, yes.
Come on, but it's not new.
The other stuff, right?
It's not new. You've been doing it for years and years.
I have. I guess it's learning the new part is really about learning the technology, the social media.
Oh, 100%.
All of that.
So exhausting.
That you can hear your message. Yeah. And that's the part I find frustrating because what I'm doing is so incredible, but it's, you've got to keep getting it out there. And I find that really is the learn.
Totally understand that.
I don't want to be the best kept secret on the internet.
Especially when you do transformative work like you. Where can we find yourself online? And we're going to link to the Becoming You program specifically in the show notes as well for anyone who's interested. We didn't say whether it was online or not, but it is an online program.
I do have a recorded version of it, which is totally available as well. However, I really encourage that we work in the group program. Yep. You do get a one-on-one coaching session with me if you do go down the do-it-yourself part, which has all the meditation recordings and everything that you need to go. But it is far more powerful, I feel, doing it as part of a group. And I might still take down that part of it yet. I'm just not sure. People love to do self-paced. So I really want to be able to offer that too. And look, they might do it and then go, I really want to do this.
Yes.
With a group. So maybe I won't then. Just talk
about it. I would offer both, but then say if you want to join the live one, then you're welcome to it.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you that Women in Circle, we have been doing it for, I was talking about this with the previous guest, doing it for gazillions of years. There is so much joy and co-regulation and community and an end of that isolation thing when we come together. Yeah. And it also, what I love about group coaching is that you're not setting the coach up to be the guru or the person with all the answers. It's very much about self-discovery and doing the exercises as a tool for creating more connection to your own answers and being acting from a sense of self-agency.
Because I think, oh my gosh.
It's not.
You should write copy.
You should hear about my side gig. So funny.
Was so gorgeous. That was so from the heart. And that's exactly it. That's what I love about it too.
Good.
And
I must say, midlife for me, I think there is a part of the perimenopause journey where we are meant to psychologically go through a shift into a little bit more autonomy and independence. I'm working with a beautiful lady who's specialized in midlife psychology, and she writes about that. I can't wait to write her book. I'm just waiting until she gets less busy, but I'm like, come on, this needs to be out in the world. But that desire for autonomy that happens at the front end of the perimenopause shift for a lot of us is for a purpose. And I feel like it's that lying on the forest floor part of, I just need deep rest. But there is absolutely a need for us to come back together, and particularly in circle and healing and ritual, to help heal in a collective form that is way more powerful.
And uphold each other, right?
Exactly.
In a nurturing, compassionate way that only women really can.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Giving and receiving is a magical thing.
Yeah.
Chris, you have been such a beautiful guest. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and really honoring the fact that I know you do talk about your son's accident a lot and speak about it as well at events, but I understand how tender those things can be at times. And sometimes when you don't expect them to be still tender, they turn into tender moments. And yeah, just honoring the fact that you felt comfortable enough to share that with us. But thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Colin, for being you and putting this together and then giving people, women, a space to talk with you like this. It's just been gorgeous. Thank you.
Going back to the pig-headed thing, you've just reminded me that something else that I was told all the time was I talk too much. And guess what? That's my business.
There you go.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a gift.
Yeah, exactly.
Tribute. It's a tribute of mine.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I love it.
Thank you so much for tuning in, my friend. And if you enjoyed this app, please share it with another midlife friend or take the opportunity to go and rate and review the show on your favorite listening platform. All of these things really help us to reach more women in midlife. Now, I don't know if you know, but I am both a storyteller who helps healers and helpers capture and communicate their work through the magic of storytelling, and I'm a midlife self-care coach who is super passionate about helping other women reframe perimenopause and midlife as a powerful and purposeful time of transformation. To find out more about me and my work, you can head to Instagram at Kylie Patchett, or my website, kpcreative.com.au, and that is kpkreative.com.au, and you will find all of those links in the show notes. Have a spectacular day, and may you be setting yourself wild and finally fucking free.